Hi, I'm Jenny Copeland.
And I'm Farrison.
And we're co-authors of Drive Through Success. Okay, welcome to another episode of Drive Through Success. I'm Gary Holton and I'm here with Jenny and Vary. How are you guys today this morning? Good?
Good.
Very good, thank you.
Very good. Well, so this week's theme is I am who I see myself to be. And in your article this week, you actually were talking about Louise Hay and how she inspired you. And I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how her book, You Can Heal Your Life, how that inspired you. So who's going to start?
Well, actually, the book that I read, it was actually my lovely friend Dot, who lived next door to where I was working at the time. She used to leave me little presents on the desk, and one of the presents she left me was Meditations to Heal Your Life. So there's a book, You Can Heal Your Life, but there's also one called Meditations to Heal Your Life.
Okay.
And it's basically a book of affirmations, so simple statements that you say to yourself. And it was the first time that I had ever been kind to myself. And so that the affirmations are like, I deserve to be loved. I deserve happiness. Lots of positive things like that. And I had never spoken to myself in a loving way like that before. So the first time, I think the first couple of times I was reading it, it made me feel very emotional. I'm pretty sure I cried, which actually happens to a lot of people the first time they do that, because, you know, through conditioning and, you know, other things, you can go through your childhood, or you develop it maybe later in childhood, you start being very negative to yourself. I certainly did, and wasn't speaking to myself in that way. And that was in my late 20s before it had even occurred to me that you could speak to yourself in that way. So that was a real changing point in my life, was actually thinking about how I was speaking to myself and therefore looking at how I saw myself. So obviously, you know, I was going through life doing all the stuff, but I was doing it with this really negative self-image, which was affecting everything that I was doing. And, you know, I was feeling very frustrated, was had a lot of behaviour patterns that were really bad for me, because I believed, you know, to a certain extent that I was bad and that I didn't deserve good things, or that I wasn't born into a life where I would get good things. So reading that book really, really changed my perspective on it, and made me think there is a different way to see myself. And when I read it, I knew that it was right. You know, it felt like it came from a place, and at that time I didn't know as much as I know now about, you know, your true self and where real truth comes from. But I felt it. I felt that was right, and I felt that the other negative things I was saying to myself was not, but it had been learned behaviour. So it was, as I say, really life-changing for me. What about you, Jenny? When did you read it?
Well, I was just going to, before we, oh. I was just going to say, so in the book, does she give you examples of positive self-talk, the things that you should be saying, or?
Yeah, well, the whole book is statements. Mm-hmm. So it is literally written like, I am a child of an abundant universe. Things like that, might not be that exact statement, but I deserve to be loved. Louise Hay does kind of, I think, you know, at that time I would have listened to some of her YouTube podcasts and stuff as well. She's very much about going back to your childhood state, talking to your child, which again is very profound, but quite upsetting, can be upsetting, as a technique they use in Buddhism, and certain meditation practices as well. But it's going back to imagine your child and imagine you're talking to yourself as a child. And what would you say to your child, you know? And actually, you would be really caring and nurturing towards a child. Everybody would. Mm. But you've forgotten about that child that you were. And as an adult, learned to be very negative, to tell it no, to, you know, point out all of the weaknesses and negative things that you think about yourself that we all have, instead of looking at the positive things. we have a very skewed, idea of ourselves until you actually sit down and look at it differently. So it's definitely life-changing for me.
So I can remember buying my first copy. There's the bookseller at the Mind Body Spirit Festival in London, which was one of my absolute favourite places in the whole world to visit. And when I started reading Louise's words, it just spoke to my soul. So the fact that there was somebody that had grown up and experienced alcoholism, that had had been abused, had suffered, and then had realised that there was an alternative, that you didn't have to define yourself and the rest of your life didn't have to be defined by those early experiences. So I think the reason it spoke to me was because I was already very successful from a corporate point of view. So, you know, I got an awful lot of validation in the workplace. So I was a very functionally high achieving human being, but I was an emotional low achiever, and had a very poor self-esteem. So, you know, if I hadn't come across You Can Heal Your Life and I hadn't engaged in the exercises and made changes, if I was going to make predictions, you know, I would be possibly trapped in a loveless marriage and being abused, maybe not physically, but emotionally. So life-changing, absolutely life-changing. So it's interesting when you make some conscious effort to be somebody different, it's really interesting the feedback loop that you get into. You can really quickly identify whether the changes that you're making are valued or not. And part of the Who Am I Being context and setup, there's an exercise where we take time to reflect on who are the important people in our life and what, you know, it's like an audit. What relationship do we currently have with those people and what relationship would we like to have with those people? And then what do you need to do? You know, what do I need to do to be able to influence that relationship and to get it closer to how you would want it to be? And it's interesting because I think I always sort of, I think I've been this, I think I've gone through life thinking I'm responsible for changing the world and improving it, you know, on behalf of everybody.
Yeah.
So my professional training in retail was all about customer experience and touch points, you know, detailed touch points, and therefore everything that I do as a consumer, so go on holiday, go swimming, go to the doctor, you know, and when you think about it, everything you do is a consumer experience of some description. I've lived my life in judgment and assessment and constant disappointment, you know, if it hasn't met the standard that I was expecting. So when we went to Tunisia about 4 years ago, three or four years ago, we had booked and we travelled a week after the terrorist attack on the beach. And we had an opportunity to cancel that holiday, and it was actually the children that said, no, we'd like to continue to support the Tunisian economy because it's a poor society anyway, and this tragedy was going to really have an awful impact. So we decided to go ahead with the holiday. And we loaded the car up to drive to Liverpool to fly out. And my husband and I turned to the two kids and we said, right, if we're going to make this holiday a success, we all have to switch off our criticism filter. And we all have to expect that there will be things happening that we've got no control over. We might get to the airport and the flight might be cancelled. The holiday might be cancelled because none of us are in control of this situation. And we're going into a situation where some people will have been traumatised. The local people will maybe be behaving differently because of what's happened. So we're not in control, but we have an opportunity here to make the best of this situation. And basically fast forward to our first experience in the restaurant, the morning buffet. And I went up in the queue and the two kids were behind me and my husband was in front of me. And the man was making, I'm a pescatarian, so I don't eat any meat or poultry. And traditionally on these all-inclusive holidays, the person cooking the omelettes is using the same ladle for the veg as they use for the meat. So, and traditionally I kick off and I, you know, make this big, you know, I'm responsible for ensuring every hotel in the world treats its vegetarians appropriately. And it's hugely embarrassing for everybody around me that knows me. But I've always, you know, the principle has always been more important than other people's feelings. So here we are in the queue, and we've made this contract of no criticism and practicing acceptance. And I say, could I have cheese and onion, please? And the man picks up the ladle that's got bacon on. And my husband goes into, you know, readiness mode for kickoff, expecting me to kick off. And the kids kind of do a sharp intake of breath, ready for me to kick off. So everybody's on standby for me to give this man a lesson about how to serve vegetarians. And he put his ham-coated ladle into the cheese. And I nodded and said, thank you very much. And he put that into the omelette. And everybody around me was kind of like, oh my God. Yeah, she didn't kick off. And I accepted the omelette and I sat down and I ate the omelette. And do you know what? It didn't kill me. But what I noticed was how calming, I'm getting quite emotional, you know, how calm that breakfast was. How, you know, it just was different. And clearly, other than the fact that I had to accept that I was eating a little bit of bacon that I wouldn't normally want, and clearly I, you know, took it out of the omelette, I didn't negate that man. I didn't embarrass my children. I didn't create a load of adrenaline ready, you know, to sit down and eat this meal. And the difference was palatable, absolutely palatable. I don't know that I always managed to maintain that level of calmness and acceptance in my life. I wish I could. And I think it comes back to, let Vari speak now, but it comes back to the, you know, Eckhart Tolle stuff around, you know, living in the moment, the power of now, and just accepting that we really do have the power in the moment to make heaven or hell. Mm. And sadly, too many of us spend our lives creating hell.
So did the kids say anything to you when you got to the table? Was it discussed at all?
Yeah, absolutely. They all humorously, you know, they would sort of, you know, like that embarrassed laughter, you know, that post-trauma nervous laughter, because the expectation was that they were going to be, I think the expectation was they were going to hate me again because I was just so awful in queues. And when they got back to the table, you know, they were laughing and just going, oh God, Mum, you know, you didn't kick off. And I was like, yeah, I know. And they were like, oh, we couldn't believe, you know, we were just waiting for you to kick off. And then the conversation got round to, you know, how much nicer it was. They were really curious about why on this occasion I was willing to accept that little bit of ham juice on the ladle, and was it bothering me, and was I okay, and did they want me to go up and get them another omelette? So there was a lot of care in their reflections back to me, but a huge amount of gratitude that I hadn't ruined the breakfast. Amazing. And you know, it's just another thought comes up, if you're a parent, is, you know, how you behave is how they're going to behave.
Yeah.
And I know now at my cost that I've got three highly opinionated people who, three young adults who are also on missions for criticising service providers because it's not good enough. And it's me. I am watching myself being played back at me.
Mm-hmm.
So I apologise to every retail outlet restaurant in the world. Sorry, Byron.
No, I was just going to say, and before that time when you decided to make the decision not to react, were you aware of the effect it had on your family every time you did it?
Oh, that's a really tough question. And I think the answer is sometimes yes.
Yeah. But you felt the point was too worth making.
Yeah, I think I think Rob and I, my husband, are both highly principled people and have very high standards. And I think we both, you know, and it is fair to say that if you are paying for a service, you should expect a quality of service in return, you know, equal to what you're paying. So I'm not saying that, you know, you become a doormat. So interestingly, something happened. We went on holiday earlier this year to Cape Verde, and something happened. And it's funny enough, it was to do with the meat again. interestingly, the waiter, I ordered an eggs Benedict without the bacon, and it came with bacon. And I asked the waiter to bring me an eggs Benedict without the bacon, very calmly, very respectfully. And what came back was the same meal, and the chef had just, you know, scraped out the bacon. And on this occasion, it just wasn't acceptable. It really wasn't acceptable. So I just pushed it to one side, ate what was around me, didn't make a fuss, and left it at that. And again, the kids were kind of looking at me as if to say, you know, when is she going to start? And I didn't, because I think I've learned that although it's important to make the service point, it shouldn't be at the cost of everybody's feelings around you. So what I did on that occasion is I privately went to guest services and made them aware of my disappointment at the way, you know, the vegetarian meal was being handled. And when we went back to that restaurant another time and I asked for the same thing, it was served appropriately. So I think your question was I aware? Yes, I think I was, but I think I was lost up. I was too wrapped up in me and being principled and, you know, demanding high standards. So I may have been aware, but I wasn't, you know, I was aware of it, but I wasn't aware of the damage I was doing, actually.
Yeah.
I'd go as far as to say I was damaging them. Wasn't aware of how much I was ruining the opportunity for joy and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I felt, you know, the trade-off, the price to pay, the trade-off was worth it.
Yeah.
And now I'm in a different place.
Yeah. And I think that is where the success at being someone exercise is really kind of eye-opening. And it's, you know, it's not something, I think it's something that's taken a while for me to kind of sink in and to actually realise incidents like that, how I come across to other people. Because your idea of yourself is so different than how you come across to other people. And you will seem different to different people. Like, I've said to one of my other friends about how some people find me intimidating and stuff like that. And she's like, I cannot believe anybody would say that. But it's just, I guess, you know, it would probably be too difficult to sit and, you know, decipher why, but there'll probably be reasons why you're different with different people. Definitely with immediate family members, I think there are behaviour patterns that are like little plays that play out. I've noticed that, and this exercise definitely helped me to notice that with my immediate family, like my mum and my sister and stuff. You very easily fall into a little script that's the same, and often it's a negative one, and it ends up in somebody being upset or several people being upset. You don't perceive it as you being the one that is, you know, affecting it. But definitely you have the ability to change it. That's definitely what I've learned. Whether it's you that's the instrumental in it all, you have a role to play, and your role could be that actually you make peace of the situation because you refuse to continue in that little step by step. And everybody has a role in it. Everybody has a little part to play. But if you kind of decide, you know what, actually, I'm not going to react like this time because I know the end result of that. And that is usually everybody ends up upset, all three of us, you know. And I think families particularly go have these things. So definitely doing the being success at being someone really does make you think about your own role in these relationships and what you are doing in them. And it's like, yeah, loads of things are about things that happened in the past in your family. Maybe it's things you've taken over from your own parents. Most of the time it is. And that they've taken on from their parents. Most of the time it is. But you actually do have the ability to change it. But again, like we've said in previous podcasts, it is about stopping, looking at what the reality of the situation is, looking at your role in it and how that affects the energy of other people. And when you sit and you address that and look at it and say, look, here's my relationship with my mum. How good is it? Would I like it to be better? And what is my role in that? How could I make it better? Not how do I change my... You can't change your mother, you know. And you wouldn't want to either most of the time. Maybe sometimes you would, depending on your mum. But it's more about, you know, accept these people. You can't change people. You've got to really get your expectations clear about that. They have their own stuff. Well, actually, you can, but you can't forcibly change people. The best way to change people is by example and energy. So if people feel your energy, see your example, then they're more likely to go, you know what? How come that person is like that? That is amazing. Like, and then you would maybe sit and look at how they're acting and change your own behaviour. But it definitely comes from looking at your own behaviour, being honest with yourself. As I say, don't bullshit yourself about anything. What are you doing? And how is that perceived? And could you be better? And then see how that changes your relationships. Mm-hmm. I definitely feel it's changed mine.
Yeah, and so again, kind of just listening to Vari there, and I think there is something about knowing and noticing that with time comes an opportunity to recontract.
Yeah.
And I think we don't recontract, you know, so you're right.
You may
right.
want to explain what contracting is. Yes, which is a good one. But.
So Vari's absolutely right. You know, you're born into something and you assume the rules, the narrative and the rules of that family or that, you know. So then you go to school and you start to learn there's a different set of rules in school, and then you go to maybe college or uni or start work and you realise a different set of rules in that environment. You know, you go down the pub and there's a different set of rules down there. I guess people don't go down the pub anymore, do they? The wine bar or the bistro or something. So the contracting bit is, you know, we all have kind of psychological contracts. So if I see a man wearing a police officer's uniform, or indeed a woman wearing a police officer's uniform, then I immediately have a set of expectations of that. It's really of the uniform. And I expect that person, if I went up to them and asked for directions or help, I would expect that person to give me directions or help because it's part of my contract, you know, my psychological contract. It's not written, it's not espoused, it's just what I expect. If that police officer's been trained and has got this sense of, I'm not a glorified tourist person, and I'm not going to give, you know, if somebody wants directions, they can look at Google Maps. Then if I go up to that person and say, in their police officer's uniform, you know, could you give me directions? And they say no, I will have this psychological contract conflict, mm-hmm. because they will not be behaving in accordance with my expectation, even though we've never actually verbally talked about what that expectation is. So in families, we end up with these psychological contracts playing out, often never discussed, I say often never discussed, oxymoron, but, you know, not discussed, not clarified, and therefore the explicit contracting's never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if anybody's ever watched Dirty Dancing, you know, where, you know, she does that lovely speech to her dad, you know, sort of, you know, daddy, I expected more from you. And he's like, you know, I expected more from you. And that was a beautiful example of psychological contracts. You know, I thought you would step up for the underdog, but it seems to me it's only on your terms.
Mm-hmm.
So in families, we trundle along with these, you know, this is what I expect of. And we forget that those people that are called parents, now that I'm of an age where I've exceeded pretty much how old my parents were when they died, you know, now I know that they were human beings, mm-hmm. living a life and doing the very best they could without any rules or guidance as to how to be parents.
Yeah.
Parenting using the model of their own parents, because that's all they knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, because of alcoholism, they weren't the best examples for them. And now I'm parenting using my parents' parenting as my, you know, starting point. So now I know that actually my expectation of them as parents was probably the same as my expectation of, you know, service providers was far too high.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, there was a lot of disappointment in my life, mm-hmm. from my parents, and some of it was real and some of it was justified and some of it wasn't. So I think this whole thing about taking time to have those conversations, you know, if I went home tonight and said to the family, like, could we sit down and contract with each other? You know, they'd have been like, oh, mum's on one again. but taking the time to kind of, now that I've got three young adults, children, you know, we do need to talk about what does that mean now? What does it mean financially? What does it mean responsibility-wise? What does it mean about chores around the house? Because if you don't have those conversations, they will continue to play out as, you know, we come in, food is put on the table, we hang out and play, washing and ironing gets done. You know, nothing's changed for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for me, I become the drudge of the house and the nag and the bore. So I have to recognise that if I don't want to be the drudge and the nag and the bore, I have to sit down with people and express what it is that's bothering me and recontract some new rules. You know, and those new rules need to be that I expect the three, you know, the five adults in the house to take an equal share in the running of the house. And what's reasonable and what's unreasonable. So while we take a break from the podcast, I thought it'd be useful to take some time to just reflect on some positive affirmations that will help set up our energy and get us in that place for really attracting all the things and conditions we need to be successful. So just sit back and relax. If you're driving, it's fine. You can just listen to these affirmations and build them into your daily routine. So I commit to my personal success for today and the future. I experience abundance, health, and happiness in all I do. I am happy because I choose happiness.
I am healthy because I eat healthy foods and choose activities that help to keep me healthy and vital. I am abundant because I am a child of an abundant universe. I focus on the things I want and I do all I can with the resources I have to make my dreams come true. I am grateful for what I have now, yet I am confident that my goals and dreams are in the process of manifestation. I love myself, I approve of myself. I forgive others for actions that have harmed me. I forgive myself for harming others and myself, even when I don't know that I have.
I trust that I am loved and supported by the universe. I also trust that everything is exactly as it should be at this moment in time. even though there are times I find it difficult to comprehend why. I accept my role in my life is to be clear as to what I want, to do all I can now to help myself, and to be open, willing, and active in the recognition and acceptance of my gifts as they are manifested. All is well in my world. Thank you, Universe. And you can find that on page 45 of Drive Through Success.
Well, so just going back to again to this week's theme, which is I am who I see myself to be. So are there any sort of practical steps that we can recommend to the people listening in on how to, you know, to look at themselves and decide who they're going to see themselves as on a daily basis? Is there some ways that we can advise them on how to help them with that?
Yeah, so I guess what I was describing in my journey is that when I woke up when I was 30 years old, I was extremely successful professionally, so, you know, in work. And that was very much driven by using, you know, this was the 80s, the QMS, quality management systems. And quality management systems were about clarity of vision, clear objectives, and then weekly actions and daily actions. So the to-do list. You know, what struck me was that from a private life point of view, I was not terribly successful in relationships and not, you know, therefore not very happy at my circumstances. Single mum, failed marriage. And, you know, it's that thing about if I don't do something different, what's going to change? So if I continue doing what I'm doing, I presume I will continue to get the results that I'm getting. So I was doing a daily to-do list. That was brilliant. But I wasn't doing a daily to-be list. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, I was getting angry and I was getting, you know, I knew who I was. I was this high-functioning, intimidating human being who I think demanded, you know, I think I knew what I wanted and I think I demanded it from my relationships. And therefore, it's no surprise that many of those relationships, you know, unless people were locked in because they were family or my lifelong friends, you know, why would somebody want to be in a friendship with somebody like me? So the daily to-be list, and it's you know, the process is in the book. The starting point is doing that personal audit bit of who do I want to be? So... you know, there's an exercise that says visualize maybe end of life and think about, you know, how do you want people to be talking about you in years to come? Do they want to be talking about abrasive, high performing, successful person? Or do they want to be talking about loving, kind, fun, gentle, joyful, successful person? You know, daughter, mother, sister, aunt. So the defining who I want to be at this, you know, it's almost like equal to the vision. So this is what I want to achieve in my life vision-wise. It's having that vision for yourself as well as a human being. Who do I want to be? And then the daily process of waking up every morning and saying, so what am I grateful for? Because that the gratitude bit sets up our baseline energy. So gratitude is one of the highest vibrations we can operate in. So by starting the process with the five things we're grateful for, we're immediately launching ourselves into positive vibration. And then following that with the who am I being? And I now do who am I being before I do my to-do. So who am I being today? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm being calm, I'm being organized, I'm being joyful, I'm being relaxed, I'm being gentle, I'm being fun, I'm being productive. Mm-hmm. I always pop in the productive. It's good to be productive. And maybe at a weekend I would not pop in the productive, you know. I'm being gentle is a way of reminding myself that it's not all about the grind, You know, it's okay. There are days it's okay not to be on the grind. It's to be, you know, it's okay to be gentle. And that's the to-be list. So it's not clever. It's not rocket science. It's just, and they're the words that work for me. Other people will have other words that work for them. So maybe it's I'm being energized. I'm being fit. I'm being focused. You know, there'll be days that I'll say I'm being focused. And then after that, leading into that to-do list. So what are the things I'm going to get done today that are important to me that probably will help take me towards my vision?
So is it a to-be list? Is it the same as affirmations for people that know what affirmations are? You know, is it the same kind of thing, or is it simpler?
It's similar, but I would say it's simpler. And I guess a lot of the time I have affirmations that I'll say as well in the morning. So I would do gratitude, how I want to be, if there's anybody I need to forgive, and affirmations. But the to-be list is definitely simpler than affirmations. I think affirmations are much more, for me anyway, I've been using them much more as a visioning tool, about specific goals and visions that I have. But the to-be list is a very simple, you know, idea of how I want the day to go, but based on what I have power to change, or to have what I have control over, and that is me.
But written down,
yeah. Yes. So, yeah, literally, to-be list will be, I will be fun, happy, flowing, maybe productive. But yeah, on some days, particularly if I'm feeling low, there might not be a lot, but there will definitely be, I will be calm, patient, understanding, kind to myself and others. Because I think we do sometimes need to remind ourselves of that. So it is again about, you know, if you're in a really low place, or you're feeling ill, or, you know, you're female and you're hormonal, for me, then that's about saying, actually, I'm not going to put a lot of expectations on myself today. I'm just going to be kind, compassionate, gentle, and that's it. And it just gives you a different perspective of the day and how you want the day to go.
Do you think you should share, you know, these lists with anybody, or is it something that you keep to yourself? You know, because to-do lists, you know, sometimes it's worth telling somebody else that what's on your to-do list, but a to-be list is probably a bit more personal. Would you?
I don't tend to share it regularly. Like, I'm probably, you know, quite open, as you could tell from reading the book, so I don't mind telling people these things if they ask about them, but I wouldn't go to work and say to my colleagues, I've decided, oh, well, maybe sometimes I would actually, I've decided I'm going to be fun today.
Having a fun day.
I'm going to have a fun day. Sometimes I would do that, but if it's deeply personal stuff, maybe not. But also, we've had a conversation at work where we said, actually, see if you're having a bad day and you're feeling really sensitive, it's quite good to tell your colleagues that before you overreact to things. You know, I've said that before. I'm just letting you know, I'm hormonal today, I'm deeply sensitive, don't take anything I say to heart. I'm going to try and just sit in the corner and, like, just be on my own. But the fact that, yeah, that's the only times I'd maybe, and I wouldn't do that every day. That would just be if I felt it was really important to let people know I'm not in a good place today.
Yeah, because I guess what comes up for me is this thing about you know, being authentic. So it is, in, you know, you open your eyes in the morning and you just don't know how you're going to be feeling. So you may have had a bad night's sleep, you may go to sleep positive, you may have slept really well, and you open your eyes and, from, you know, out of the blue, you have this feeling that is just not nice, you know. So, and then you start labelling it. So
yeah.
Is that sadness? Is that low energy? Is it the beginnings of a cold or an illness? And I guess the to-be list isn't about not honouring how you're feeling and being dishonest with yourself. So in the event of waking up and feeling sad, then that may well be a day when I would say, okay, I'm going to be gentle with myself today, and I'm going to honour that feeling of sadness. I don't know what it's attached to. I might ask myself if I know what it's attached to. But there is something about allowing your feelings to process through you,
yeah,
and not block them.
Yeah.
So it's not, I feel sad, I'm, you know, so it's not kind of, affirmations tend to be statements of fact, you know, I am. So I am healthy. I am, you know, I am joyful. I am. So they have a place and they're really powerful. Whereas I think the to-be list is much more a daily choice to choose something.
A higher vibration.
Yeah, it's to take responsibility for how you're going, how you expect the day to be.
And how you react to it, and how you react to your own feelings even.
Because,
you know, as you were saying, it's not about not feeling or trying to change your feelings. You know, feel what you feel. But, you know, and as Jenny says, honour that. That, you know, we're going to have different feelings day to day. It's not about trying to force yourself to always be positive and happy. That's not authentic, and it's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to be genuine, not bullshit yourself, but at the same time say, how am I going to how do I react to this? Because if you're in a really bad mood, you feel really low, you could go out there, if you haven't thought about it, and be absolutely crappy to everyone you come across, because that's how you feel. But, you know, my experience, because sometimes I go out there and do that, is that attracts more of the same. That attracts other people getting upset. You know, you're affecting relationships, you're not able to do the things you want to do. And if you instead decide, today I will be gentle with myself and others because I know I'm feeling quite low, you'll have a different day. You might still have the feelings, but you won't be acting in a way that makes it worse. And you might even find by the end of the day, you've kind of changed the mood because you've actively, consciously decided to be kind and loving to yourself.
Something else that can be helpful is in the to-be list is to allow. So, you know, so if I'm at odds with somebody, if I know that I'm going to be seeing somebody and I'm at odds with them, then in my to be list, I may well put, you know, today I'm going to allow a new relationship, allow myself to see this person in a positive light, allow resolution or healing. And it's kind of a, you know, it's just opening the door a chink. Sometimes when we go from 0 to 100, you know, I'm in a terrible relationship, and then, you know, my relationship is perfect. We actually can set ourselves up for failure because the subconscious is saying, that's just ridiculous. You know, that is so far away from the truth. And I don't know how to do that. So affirmations are good, and it's kind of where affirmations come in. So if I was affirming today to myself that I have a healthy body and I eat healthy foods, you know, I've got a good few pounds to lose, and yes, I have a healthy body, but it's overweight. And yes, I choose healthy foods. So affirmations are stepping stones towards building a self-image and an identity that then equals positive self-esteem. Whereas I think the daily to-be list is the function of noticing and recognising where I am today, what I'm going to be doing today, and who I want to be today. How do I want people to experience me today? That is consistent with who I want to be. So I remember I said about the longer term vision.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember going back to healing the relationship with my dad, and you know, I'd got into some really poor routines with my dad, where you know, I did the duty phone call, and to be absolutely blunt about it, I was phoning to check he was alive. I didn't want to talk to him, really. I wasn't interested. You know, I kind of felt his day was fairly empty and meaningless. I wasn't interested in talking to him. And his end of the routine was that he would come up with loads of questions to keep me on the phone,
mm-hmm.
which irritated me. And I would often phone him when I was in the middle of work, busy. You know, I would squeeze in this duty phone call, which was, okay, you're alive, that's it, that's all I'm interested in. And when I did the activities around who do I want to be, you know, what has as a daughter, who, what type of a daughter do I want to be? And when I kind of reflected on that, and it was like, I wanted to be loving, I wanted to be caring, I wanted to be compassionate and concerned and supportive, I wanted to be fun. And when I really thought about that and then thought about my behaviour, who was I being? I wasn't being any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely allowed me to heal that relationship and recreate routine. So I noticed the time I was phoning wasn't a good time because I was rushing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would change the time of the phone call, knowing that my dad would want 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. So I would dial the number in the old days when telephones had dials, prepared to be on that call for 5 minutes. And instead of just saying, you know, oh, good, you're there, I need to rush, I would say, hi, how are you? What have you been doing today? And of course, the hilarious bit of this was after a few days of this, my dad very quickly picked up that some of this was unnecessary, and then he would say to me, you know, thanks for calling, I'll let you go now. and that string of questions that were designed to keep me on the call stopped. So the thing that was irritating me about the call disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And the calls became wonderful. They yeah. became yeah. joyful.
And probably all your dad wanted was some connection.
Yeah.
And if you were doing other things,
yeah,
you weren't giving him connection.
Oh, he absolutely got that I was squeezing in a quick phone call to check that he was alive. He got that, you know. And he was just craving a bit more authentic love,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I look back on it now. So I was really pleased that I had that opportunity to have a few years, I think it was about 8 years in total, where our relationship fundamentally changed. And that was because I took time to think about, how do I want to be experienced? Who do I want to be? How do I intend to show up? And then on a day-to-day basis, reflected on what are the tiny differences, tiny tweaks I have to make
mm-hmm.
to change this experience, to be somebody different.
And that's something that you continually have to do.
Absolutely. You know.
Throughout
your
life.
Yeah.
Okay, well, unfortunately, I think that's all we've got time for in this episode. So thank you very much.
Sure
you tune in for the next episode. Remember, go on to the website, drive-throughsuccess.com, and get yourself a copy of the book if you've not already got it. And there's also an opportunity on there to sign up for the weekly newsletters that we put out as well. So get yourself on there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast, and I hope you found it enjoyable and informative. If you want to connect with us more, you can of course join our Facebook page, Instagram, all on Drive Through Success, and don't forget that hyphen between the drive and the through. Or indeed, you can visit us at our website, drive-throughsuccess.com, and there you can either find different ways to buy the book. You could request a signed copy, and we'd be happy to sign that and send that out to you. And indeed, you can sign up for the weekly guidance letters that come out via email. So once again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.